The aim of this video is to introduce you to the History Project. The History Project is aligned to our first learning outcome that aims to create a historically more complex understanding of today's M&E. The guiding quote of this unit is from a novel by Hartley. I quote, "The past is a foreign country. They do things differently there." How should we interpret this quote? Well, one implication is that analogous to a tourist who explores the world, we can visit as students or scholars, we can visit the past. And as humans, we are constantly comparing those new impressions to what is well known to us. As a result, we can use this contrast to learn something. Related to the past, this can provide a lot of clarity in thinking. What is new? What is old? And this helps us to see more clearly what makes today's world. So let's now dive into some of the large-scale historical developments that seem to affect today's international business. Most importantly, we need to position today's international business in the context of globalization. Globalization is a measure or is often measured in terms of the amount of cross-border integration. And this is a process. A famous quote by Guyen, a sociologist, states that the globalization process is one that leads to greater independence and mutual awareness, reflexivity, among economic, political, and social units in the world, and among actors in general. For us, it is important to see that this process of globalization that Guyen describes is seems to happen in waves over time. And historians do differentiate two waves of globalization so far. First one evolved from the mid-19th centuries and then more or less abruptly stopped, ended in the interwar period. Then later on, we experienced the second wave of globalization, which emerged in the 1980s. And right now, there is a huge debate in academia, but also in practice, whether this period is right now ending. So the question is, have we entered a new phase of deglobalization? Important for us here is to understand that the drivers of those waves merely consists of two factors. That is technology and policy. So let's first look at technology as a driver of globalization. This table here summarizes a sharp reduction of transport and communication costs. And obviously, those are input factors that are extremely relevant for businesses that operate globally. Consider here, for instance, the last column, the immense reduction of communication costs. In 1930s, one has to imagine that a 3 minutes phone call between New York and London amounted up to over $200. Today, well, we can Zoom for free. This all indicates that technological change was one of the main drivers of the second wave of globalization. Let's have a look now at policy and policy changes that influenced the process of globalization. In the first period, historians are well aware that one factor that fed into the first wave of globalization was Western imperialism. So most of Asia and Africa was taken over and also forced open for trade and investment by European colonial powers. Then when we look at the second wave of globalization, there is another important Western style institution. It is the establishment of free trade institution and policies on a global scale. So organizations were put in place after the Second World War, such as the Bretton Woods Agreement, the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade, as well as more recently, the World Trade Organization. And all those institutions served the purpose to facilitate the movement of people, capital, and goods. Now, when we take such factors together, the policy factors on the one hand and the technology factors on the other hand, it is interesting to scrutinize the geographical distribution of international trade. This chart here, this figure, it's from a German newspaper, and I unfortunately do not have the English translation, but I think it shows graphically very clearly the changes in global production in terms of geographical location from the 1750s until the 2010s. So considering the distribution, when we look at the chart, it is fair to say that there seems to be a European 19th century, which then was taken over by the American, the US American dominated 20th century. And right now we are at the edge, and perhaps we are entering now a Chinese century, because as these charts shows, there is a steadily increase of the importance of China for global production. What's important here to see as a conclusion is that there seems to be a conjunction between political and economic power. So economic power goes along with political power and vice versa. Now, besides those political, technological factors, however, we must remember one thing, namely that it is always humans or human-made organizations that are the key vehicles of globalization. And one, perhaps the most important actor of globalization has been the multinational firm. A very simple definition of the multinational firm states that it is a firm that operates in more than one country and may coordinate their operations in various ways. So there might be various degrees of autonomy of entities that make up the multinational firm. And here it is, as I said, very important to see that the multinational firm has been and still is a medium for investment, for trade, and for knowledge transfer across national borders. As an example, in 2009, 82,000 multinational companies controlled over 810,000 branches and subsidiaries and employed over 77 million people. Then, according to this source, 80% of global trade happened in 2009. Within the value chain of those multinational firms. And I think this is very much a spectacular number. The thing is, though, that those activities seem to be extremely complicated, the activities of the multinational firm. So therefore, in this study unit, we suggest we should look into the past where there is the potential to see things more clearly. So the premise of study unit one is that if we want to understand something about today's nature and dynamics of globalization, as well as the strategic and organizational challenges of firms that operate across borders, then there seems to be ample lessons to be learned by studying the predecessors of today's multinationals during previous waves of globalization. So this is the presumption of the first study unit number one. And one key predecessor that we want to study in this study unit is the so-called freestanding company. In the first global economy, where the British were the dominating force globally, it was the freestanding company that was the key actor in establishing British foreign investments. Here I have a definition provided by Wilkins, Myra Wilkins. She is one of the leading scholars of British business history. And her definition goes as follows. So she defines a freestanding company as a firm that is set up in one country for the purpose of doing business outside that country. Note here that most often those firms had no pre-existing structures or organizations in Britain before they moved abroad. So you can see them very similar as today's born global business ventures. And historically, Wilkins estimated that there has been around 15,000 or 20,000 companies, so-called freestanding companies, that were registered in London between mid-19th century and the First World War. So key now is that when we study the freestanding company, we can learn a lot about key questions that are important for scholars of international business. Those questions include the following ones. So the first question is, how were those entrepreneurs able to build hierarchies that were superior to the market as channels of knowledge transfer? What is the evidence that they were really able to do this? And we will study this kind of evidence in the business history project, as I will explain later on. And then second important question is, how large was really this liability of foreignness of those freestanding countries when they moved abroad? And we can also ask whether this liability of foreignness diminished over time or not. And then another question that is very important is, what exactly have been the consequences of firms that are transferring knowledge and other resources across borders? And we can think of the organizational level or also at the macro level, at the host country and home country level. Then we are also interested in what kind of knowledge or technology have they transferred. And finally, the most important question is, how, if at all, have all these things changed over time? What is new today and what has a long history? And we will discuss this question in this course at length. So this brings me now to explaining better what the business history project is all about. I think I have already established that the business history project is a 4,000 words report on the history of a British freestanding company of the early 19th century venturing into a host country. So the task for you is to select one company, one freestanding company from a list of Scottish freestanding companies that Kevin Tennant, a colleague of mine, has provided us. Then the project that you will pursue is that you conduct independent research on this company by utilizing empirical evidence from historical sources, mainly media items, newspaper articles from the historical times. And also we will learn more about two conceptual lenses that might help you to illuminate and inform your research. It will be a perspective provided by Wilkins and another one by the historian Jensen Eriksen from Finland. Now, I think I have already mentioned it. This project is aligned with the first learning outcome. So you will be able to reflect on the historical nature and conception of today's amenities by researching the activities of a freestanding company of the late 19th century and drawing similarities and differences to today's counterparts in today's context. On a more general level, this will help you to gain better understanding of today's amenities, and conducting this research will help develop your research skills, because mainly this history project will be your first qualitative research project conducted at the university level. Then you will also experience and encounter complexity and uncertainty. And I think in today's professional context, those are two issues that you need to deal with. So here you can train your skill sets on a more broad level too. This then finally brings me to the guiding questions of your research. So when you will write up your report, think of those three main questions that you see on this slide. And I will not repeat those questions here. I will not read them for you, because I think it will be more helpful when you will read it by yourself and take more time. But the idea here is you will do a research project using empirical evidence and a conceptual lens, and you will use this the findings with which you will come up as an opportunity to reflect on the similarities and the differences between past and today's business conduct. On this slide here, you see the recommended structure of your essay, and we strongly advise you to follow this clear structure, to have a brief introduction, then introducing the conceptual perspectives that you are using, and providing some informations about the methods that you applied. Then the third point, the third item here is you will write up the findings in a way that I call an analytically structured case history. And later on, we will show you what we mean with this. Then, of course, you will conclude your essay with a discussion section. And obviously, you will need to have a complete reference list at the end of your report. On this slide, you see additional requirements of this report. So it will be a 4,000 words report. Three quarter of the word amount should pertain the first part and one quarter the discussion and the extension. Then, of course, we encourage you to use tables, figures, and those do not count towards the word limits. Then please use no appendix, use in-text citation and APA referencing style. Formatting you see on the slides, we recommend to use Times New Roman, 11 points and 1.5 line spacing. Then you find further instructions on writing critical essays on this link that you can click on. About assessment and grading, finally. So we will have a two-staged process. First, we will have formative assessment and only later on in the end, the final summative assessment that provides you a grade. So the formative assessment will be mostly done by your peers. So we included one task in the course where your fellow students will comment on your project and you will revise your project accordingly and by utilizing the insights provided by your peers. And then again, the final summative assessment will be done by me and Jarmo. And we will use the assessment criteria and scales of the master thesis. So you can see this project also as an opportunity for preparing yourself for the master thesis. Then here on this table, you see how we see the connection between the assessment criteria of the master thesis and and this project's focus. That's all. I talked around 26 minutes that's it for the moment. And other videos will provide you more information about the process and procedures. Thank you.